Have you ever wondered what's going on in the brain of a Salvation Army kettle worker for however long they're donating? Can you imagine how many different reactions they get when people are walking in a door at them? Sometimes I feel sorry for them, because they get some of the most awkward expressions that they might see all season. Sometimes I'm jealous of them, because I recognize that they have joy in their motivation and in their countenance as they realize the mission that they're serving. And sometimes I just want to go and talk to them. And so let me start today by saying, here's how you treat a Salvation Army worker. The first thing you do is you put something in their can. Okay? Now, if you don't have to do it every time. I really don't do it every time. But I either do one of two things when I'm approaching a Salvation Army worker. I'm either going to prepare to put something in here, because first of all, I know where it's going. I know Joseph and Rebecca Smith from Salvation Army Boyertown, very close to them, and I know what they're doing, and I support it, and this church supports it. So I don't have any issues, integrity issues or conscious issues as far as supporting them. So I'm either going to put something in the bucket, or I'm going to go up to them and I'm going to say, hey, thank you for volunteering today. I've already made a contribution to the Salvation Army, but I want you to know that I appreciate what you're doing right now. And then you go into the store. Is that so hard? The answer is no, that's not so hard. That's very easy, and it gives me great pleasure to give. It gives me great pleasure to encourage. Why? Because that's what I was saved to do. Jesus poured out his life into my life. His body was broken. His blood was shed. He poured himself into and so the model that's been demonstrated is that Christ gave his life for sinners. And therefore, we ought to return the favor to him in worship and to others through giving. Why? Because we want to participate in what they're doing. Or in just in the betterment of other people. And so here's what I want you to think about. When you hear this bell this year, I want you to hear it as a call. This is a call to abandon the self-absorbed life. God is calling you. God is calling you to abandon the self-absorbed life and to recognize that there are people around you, there are organizations around you that you can partner with, you can participate with, you can take stock in, pun intended, and give your life away, because Jesus gave his life away. Now, something just occurred to me that we could be like Pavlov's dog. For those of you that remember your science teacher's words or what you read, that Pavlov, when he had the bell, the dog learned to do certain things when he heard the bell. When you hear that bell, remember, God is calling me to abandon the self-absorbed life. Jesus said, he who gives to the least of these has given to me. Jesus says, when you give to the needy, give in secret. Don't let your right hand know what your left hand's doing. Jesus said, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Jesus said, do not store up treasures here on earth where moths eat them and rust destroy them, and where thieves break in and steal. Store your treasures in heaven, where moths and rusts cannot destroy, where thieves do not break in and steal. Do not store up treasures here on earth. Why? Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And Solomon said in Proverbs 19, whoever is kind to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will reward them for whatever they have done. And it was my father who said, in defining what poor is anyone who has less than you do. Lest we excuse ourselves because we are poor. I'm not poor, I have a jacket just like Lynn's. God is calling me to abandon the self-absorbed life. And one way that I can do this is by thanksgiving. God is calling you to abandon, to run away from the self-absorbed life. And one way that you can do this is by thanksgiving. Jesus is asking us to be intentional about this. That's why he writes so much. He says so much. He didn't write it as his apostles did. But Jesus speaks about money and possessions more than any other subject. And so when he says, do not store up for yourselves, he's asking you to be intentional about giving. That's the point when he says, do not store up for yourselves, but rather store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. You do that by giving. You do that by intentional giving. I'm not suggesting you give blindly. I'm suggesting that you be intentional and give well-informed. I know a lot about the Boyertown Salvation Army. I support it because I've learned a lot about its leaders. I meet with them regularly. Recently, we partnered in a benevolent activity. You be intentional. This requires prayer and planning. That's how your giving should unfold, through prayerful consideration and careful preparation and planning. Jesus is asking you and I to be intentional about our giving. Jesus is asking you to be cheerful about your giving, or joyful about your giving. Why? Because treasures in heaven are never stolen. Treasures in heaven never spoil. They never fade. The treasure stock in heaven, the market never goes down. Amen? It never crashes. There's never a correction. There's never disgruntled investors, stockholders who decide to pull their funds. You know, the apple never falls, pun intended. Jesus is asking you to be cheerful. Why? Because it's the best thing you can do with your life. Giving your life away. He's asking you to be joyful, because the treasures on earth, they are stolen. I had pretty much a brand new car stolen one time. It became a mobile crack clinic. It was on TV in a high-speed chase. A fire was started in it, a crack fire. It was terrible. Sorry to say, I got it back. All right. The treasures on earth, they seem to always spoil, fade, or be stolen. That's why some of you right now have something out on your lawn that you're giving away, and no one will take it. Jesus is asking you to be intentional and cheerful Why? Because we are responding to the needs of others in the same manner that he responded to us. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. While we still had rejected him, he poured out his blood for us. This is the model that Christ has given us. That's why we ought to be cheerful, because God has been cheerful in his giving himself, and he loves a cheerful giver. 2 Corinthians 9:7. We should be cheerful in our giving, because giving is an act of joy-filled, Christ-centered worship. Giving is worship. Say that with me. Giving is worship. 2 Corinthians 8:5, Paul speaks to this poor church, and their generous giving, and he says that their first action was to give themselves to the Lord. And that's the way our giving should be. It first is worship. We give ourselves to Jesus, and then prayerfully we ask him, how can we partner with him to change the world? And he gives us ways to give to others. Giving is an act of worship. And here's what we check in our hearts, friends. This is what is true. Our money always flows freely to that which we worship. Always. Some people have a hard time giving money towards certain things. On our elk hunt, the leader did not invest in any source of heat. On October 15th, you check it out. It was a record low in Colorado for October 15th. It got down to minus 7 degrees, and we were in a tent with no heat. Now, there are other things that he invests in quite liberally and generously. Heat wasn't one of them. You see, we're all kind of frugal, that's a nice way of putting it, about certain things, right? And that's because we don't value that. But we are all very generous. Our money flows freely into other things, material things, family things, whatever. Our money always flows freely to that which we worship. And so what does it mean? It means I can always afford what's first in my life. It's true. I can always afford what's first in my life. And Jesus says, listen, I want to be first in your life. I want to be first. Worship through giving is our first take from our finances, from our time, from our talents. And the gift is given in faith, believing that God will provide for my needs. Giving financially disarms the power of greed in my life. Because you can't cling too tightly to something that you're constantly giving away. If you're constantly giving money for some reason or another, you won't cling so tightly to it that greed will consume you. I can always afford what's first. Randy Alcorn said this, ironically, many people can't afford to give precisely because they're not giving. If we pay our debt to God first, then we will incur his blessing to help us pay our debts to men. But when we rob God to pay men, or dare I say, finance our children's lifestyles, we rob ourselves of God's blessing. Timothy Keller, a longtime pastor in New York City, was asked this question. Tim, in your 40 plus years of pastoral ministry, what's the main misconception or weakness you've perceived among those you've pastored when it comes to generous living? And this is what he said, and it is a direct quote. Keller said, it's the frog in the kettle problem. He says, historically, Americans of 40 years ago would be shocked to see what Christians today think of as necessities. But we view things this way because we keep defining basics the way the consumer capitalist culture wants us to, which is always being defined upward and fast. And so what are basics to us right now? We're not basics to our parents or our grandparents. Jesus is asking us to be cheerful givers. There are some of you here who give. You already know what I'm talking about. I'm preaching to the choir. Well, I want to say this. God bless you and thank you and keep giving. Always be looking for new opportunities to give. And God will always be looking for new opportunities to give back. Some of you here, you know, you might have grew up in a home where your tapes from your parents, you know, don't give to the church, you know, don't give to a church. Those people were whacked out. Those people were just after your money. Or you watch too much TV, or you just, anytime there's a charity that is seeking help or support, it's just hard for you because the culture you were raised in was a culture of keeping, safekeeping, and maybe not even a culture of buying, but just saving. And Jesus wants to break into that and say, listen, let's be missional. That's number three. Jesus is asking us to be missional in our giving. And I love this picture right here. It's a farmer looking at how his harvest is coming along, and sun is setting. He's probably getting ready for dinner, and he's satisfied. He has that farmer look of satisfaction, of knowing the work's been done, the soil's been prepared, the seed's been sown, and it's coming along nicely. And he's anticipating a harvest. Why? Because he did the work. He planted the seed, and he sees the harvest coming. And that's the way we ought to be, missional, giving towards what would be considered treasure in heaven. Jesus is asking us to be consistent in our giving. Worship-inspired generosity is a regular practice. The Apostle Paul knew that regular, systematic giving would help the people meet their weekly obligations and most emergencies. And that's the way it ought to be for us. Our giving should be consistent. It should be sensitive to the needs around us. And we ought to be ready and willing and cheerful about the opportunity. Quickly, number five. Jesus is asking us to be sacrificial in our giving, such that we obviously then are not storing up treasures on earth. And this worship, this type of worship, is what I would call a pleasurable pain. As I joyfully, cheerfully choose to go without other things because of my love for Jesus and my desire to invest in the spreading of the gospel. And that's where I developed the habit of, and I give this out free of charge, especially to people that I'm doing, helping them prepare for marriage. This is my pre-marriage awareness session on money. I say, now listen, I want you to perfect this art. Okay, are you ready? I'm going to perfect this art. And you just point at things and say, look what I don't have to buy. Look what I don't have to buy. All right, ready? Try that. Ready? Look what I don't have to buy. You get good at saying that. Look what I don't have to buy. Some of you are watching me drive my car around and saying, you should quit saying that with regard to that thing, because that car is an embarrassment to this church. Well, maybe it is. It hasn't just clunked out on me yet. So Jesus is, he's still in there. He's still keeping that thing going. It's also why I can give freely. All right? I know it looks terrible, and I'm going to do something about it in the spring. I promise this year it's going to happen. But here's the thing, okay? So maybe you like your car. That's great. Maybe you have a new car. I'm not saying you can't have a new car. I'm just saying there ought to be something that you do without, because so you can join Jesus in changing the world. That's what I'm saying. It's about abandoning the self-absorbed life. And it's not about being judgmental and saying, well, he has that and she has that. Or, you know, he goes to Colorado elk hunting or whatever. No, don't do that. Everybody has their certain things that they enjoy or whatever, and I don't think God begrudges you, but somewhere, somehow, you are going to deny yourself so that you can give and join Christ in what he's doing. I had breakfast with a savvy guy a few weeks ago, and he said this: anytime I get a surprise gift, and we all get surprises from time to time, anytime I get a surprise gift, a surprise check or whatever, he says, I give a third of it away, I save a third of it, and I spend a third of it. I love that. I give a third of it because, wow, this, I don't know where this even come from. It just like dropped out of the sky from heaven. So I'm going to say, thank you, God, and give a third of it away. I'm going to save a third of it, because saving is a good idea. Don't get me wrong here. I'm a saver. Sometimes I have conversations with people who play the lottery, and I know I shouldn't do it. But every once in a while, I'll talk to someone playing the lottery, and I'll say, did you win? You know, they're nervous. Did you win? No. And I just say, and forgive me, don't hold this against me. I just say, listen, I win every day. I win every day. I save money every month. Give a third, save a third, spend a third. Why spend a third? Because you want to have fun. Right? God isn't a killjoy. Give a third, save a third, spend a third of surprises. I'm not saying that's what you do with, you know, 100% of it. If you can do that with your entire income, I want to talk to you. Okay? Jesus speaks to us in the New Testament about our giving. He tells us not to store up treasures on earth. He doesn't say don't plan for retirement. Don't get me wrong. He doesn't say don't plan for the future. He says don't store up for yourself. There's a difference. There's a selfish, grabbing, greedy, self-absorbed motivation there. And so today, this is where I want to just land this sermon. You're going to see people ringing a bell, standing by a red kettle this Christmas season. I want you to thank God for them. I want you to contribute. I want you to put something in this red bucket. I want you to say thank you to that person. If you know you're not going to give, say, listen, hey, I already made a contribution, but I appreciate what you're doing, and I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. God bless you. You hear that bell this year, you're going to hear it many times, right? And what I want you to remember is that bell is a call. That sound should be a call to you now. It's a call to abandon the self-absorbed life and to be a cheerful giver, to be intentional, to be generous, to be sacrificial, to think about number six. Some of you are saying, man, you're just killing me because you didn't do number six. Chill out. Think on for a second. Jesus is asking us to show our children and our circle of influence the importance of abandoning the self-absorbed life, contagious generosity. Who's going to teach the next generation how to give? I hope you are. Jesus has already shown us how to give. On the night he was betrayed, he took bread and broke it. He took the cup, blessed it. He gave the bread and they ate it. He gave the cup. He said, "Do this in remembrance of me. This is my body broken for you. This is my blood spilled out for you, the blood of the new covenant." Jesus is our model. Jesus gave it all. He gave it all away. He gave himself away. May we follow his example. There are going to be a lot of opportunities this season to be generous. And I hope you'll be generous till it hurts. And I hope you'll say, as you give, "Jesus, I don't care anymore. It's not about me."